Mr. Haig, reel 8.
But he really said, really, that was his real idea. He really thought, like old Craddock did, said our Coronel, that you can't sink the Navy. Well, you could. It don't work.
They believed in the old...
Yes, yes. Oh, yes.
A couple of things. You said earlier that the officers tended to think that they were like separate beings.
They were. Officer must never be wrong. See, that was drilled into them from cadetship. You're an officer, you must never be wrong.
As a signalman, of course, you could get, because you're on the bridge and on watch, you might get closer to them.
Yeah,
what did you learn, what did you see about them from that perspective that people might miss?
Well, I may say, of course, when they're up there, they're more or less dependent on you. Lock, stock and barrel, because you do something wrong, I mean, saying they're down the drain because they're the officer watch. They haven't got a leg to stand on. And consequence, I may say that, they used to unbend. Yeah. See, you can't rely on people too much without unbending a bit. I may say you might get something, even say, do you want a cup of cocoa? Of course, they used to have special Cadbury's cocoa, not like the pusser stuff. And it used to be fetched up by a steward. Whereas you used to cook it all now you could.
And they would go to that extent and unbind a little bit like that. Would they talk to you?
Oh, yes. Oh, I've talked to you very often, I may say. Of course, I mean, you've got to realise that 9 times out of 10 it was a brain-sucking operation. They wanted to know something. Always. They didn't want to tell you much. They wanted all you could give them.
About the signals, about the life,
different things.
Mm. But you talked and they listened.
Yeah. See, they say to you, oh, how did you get on when you was in so-and-so? Then you tell them. See, especially if it was a ship your face fitted in. You rub that well and truly into them. Oh, so-and-so, always poke well and truly in when you're in the good books.
That's an example for them.
Yeah.
But they would never tell you about family life themselves or their own families or
backgrounds. It's all according to what ship they was in. I mean, so if you get in these stores and they know you and they know your family and all that lot. Now, when I was on a Vivacious, Madam was out in Malta with us. And, of course, they knew I was married and all that lot. They used to very often come and talk about different things.
And after the war, I think you said that the officers got a bit more civilised.
Yes, they did, because in 1918, that's it, after Zeebrugge fell, just before the armistice, we packed up Dover Patrol, you know, and we all went up, joined up with the Grand Fleet, Motley Throng. And we went up there and they had two hullabaloos there. One was they were putting the price of slops up. See, and the people clamped down. They weren't going to issue slops until the new price went on. And, of course, the lads got to hear of this and they objected strongly. And they had a mass meeting there and the bloke had the kowtow and we all got our slops on the old rate. Next thing was they had the row about pay. And the officers and all. The officers were quietly in it. You know, they said, more or less, we'll back you up. No mutiny, but we'll back you up in what name there. And of course, they got the right, it was only a small rise of pay, nothing to speak of. But if we hadn't got that slop lot before and then got this tuppenny halfpenny rise of pay, that would have been absorbed and more in the old slop business. But as I say, that's what happened there.
So in that way, I mean, the officers are beginning to see that you were more like them and that you're all in the same
boat. All wanted some money.
Yes.
Yeah. And they quietly agreed with it.
And having gone through the war with you, they realised to some extent how much...
Yeah, they realised that they was liable to die the same as you were. Of course, before that, no bullet dared touch them because they were naval officers. They forgot that blooming shell coming over has got no one's particular name on.
And what about the difference between the Dartmouth trained man and, say, somebody through the hose pipe, the lower deck?
Well, of course, there you've got your dignitaries and many, you know, pre-war. They were very rare. We had one or two get made officers, but very rare they were. And, of course, I may say, they didn't get on very well.
Why not?
Because these others were pucker officers. You've got your heads on the diddy box still. That was their outlook on life.
What about in terms of the men and the relations between the officers? Would they know more? Would they be different from the Dartmouth men?
Well, of course, the thing was this. You knew very well that they knew all the dodges, so you didn't try anything on them, unless you was a mug. And you knew very well that if a bloke rose from the ranks, he knew exactly what you was talking about and what you was trying to do.
Would you rather deal with a Dartmouth man than the...
No. I mean, say, I wasn't fussy. Because, I mean, say, if I didn't know the answer...
Just to get on this officer's business, you made the point, the good point, last time, that during the war, in a small ship and a destroyer, a good signalman was worth his weight.
Waiting for him, yes, they wouldn't let you go.
So this could affect your promotion?
Yes, definitely. See, now, it wasn't so bad if you was up in the Grand Fleet, but if you was detached, like, say I was down in Dover, then you'd had it. I mean, see, you was there, you know, you couldn't go, you couldn't have anything. I mean, see, they had a depot there, but they wouldn't even let you go there.
You were in the Swift, in fact, for 3 years nearly.
Yeah.
You know, because you couldn't get out of her and you were... the man for the job, from the officer's point of view. You also said you preferred, apart from that, I mean, you lost out on that in a way. Did you try to get off the ship, incidentally?
I put in for a course, but turned down flat.
You couldn't go to anybody else? You couldn't
No. Yeah. See, you was there, and that's it, and all about it.
You, made the point also that you preferred smaller ships in Spain there. Why particularly?
Well, I mean, say, you stood on your own feet. And if you wasn't worth your job, then, I mean, say, you're out of it. But, I mean, say, provided you knew your job, I mean, say, that was it. You can stand there and do your job and then all about it.
You would also get some people, I think we said, like yeoman signals, who wouldn't want a small ship for that
definitely
very reason.
Yes, definitely. They wouldn't wear it at all. I may say I've known people... Well, I was once detailed off to go to the Douglas. Well, I goes in the barracks to pass the one thing, and now the Douglas was a leader, see, she had plenty of staff. Goes into barracks whistling like a guinea pig, see, thinking to myself, oh, I'm going to the own fleet. Nice job. Gets in there, and the bloke says, oh, he says, over there for inoculation. I said, inoculation? He said, yeah. I said, what for? He said, draft. I said, I'm going to the Douglas. He said, oh, no, you ain't. He said, that's been washed out. He said, you're going out the Mediterranean. I said, thank you very much. Someone had paid their school money. She and I'd got a Swift. Huh.
That could happen in the barracks.
Yes. Yeah. See, I mean, say, that's what did happen several times. See, and I mean, say, you get near these people who've never been in this story, been in big ships where, you know, they're only one out of a mob. And consequence, when they were detailed off for a small one where they had to stand on their 2 feet and be what they paid for, they didn't want it. No.
But eventually in 1921 you yourself got leading signalman. I mean, you got there eventually. But had you been big ships, would you have got there a bit earlier, in fact, most likely?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
How would signalmen react to somebody like that, who was a bit windy about taking the responsibility and ended up with it? I mean, would you respect them, or would you think...
Well, I may say 9 out of 10, they'd soon go sick. Yes, as soon as they got the full weight, Once you get to sea or something like that, where you've got to do practically 24 hours at a time, because in a destroyer you had lead hand and two, or else a yeoman lead hand and two. Well, consequence on me, say you're on deck nearly the whole time you're at sea. And once you take the weight of that, say, if you don't want it, say, it plays on you.
You yourself never frightened of the thing. You always moved in and took it.
Yeah. Yes, in fact, I much prefer a small ship where I know what I am, and that's it and all about it.
What about promotion more generally? You got eventually your promotion.
Oh, well, of course. Your signalman, your leading signalman and all that lot, you've got to go through examination. It takes you, goodness knows what, to pass through, you open the signals. You've got to go through the mill properly. It takes a week examination.
You didn't do that at all?
Yeah, I do. You had to pass twice for that. So you do a provisional exam, and then you do the full exam.
For the top job, in fact.
And then as soon as you finish that, the bloke says to you, "Thank you very much." To see.
When you eventually got promoting to Chief Yeoman of Signals, that would be where, 1920, a bit later than
I. Yeah, yeah.
But not that period. How did you handle the men? Did you have a particular way that was different from what you'd been taught yourself?
Oh, yes, yes. As I taught them, I said, before you work on anybody, learn to work with them. I said, that is the first principle. I said, you learn to get that into your head, and you'll never go far wrong.
You can never, don't do a man a bad turn if you can't do him a good one.
If you can't do him a good one, don't do a bad. Another one I used to always poke into them, never try to lie yourself out of anything. I said, if you've done something, say it and finish with it. I said, they won't shoot you.
And a lot of the promotion, apart from that, was dead. Even if you've got your exam, you wouldn't necessarily get promoted.
No. You've got to wait. You had to wait your turn, years and years.
Can I just change it a little bit again and go on and ask you about... we talked there mainly about relations between officers and signalmen and men and officers and so on. What about relations between the signalmen and the other branches? The gunners and the seamen and, what do you call them?
Sand scratchers.
Sand scratchers.
Well, of course, they always had that idea that you was trying to put one over on them. They always had that idea in their heads that you've got a soft job. They said, what do you do? Nothing. Except when you get them up there giving your hand. Do you know when I was in the Vivacious, I used to have what? There was never a signalman on the bridge by himself. There was always someone from either the upper deck, poking around doing something, or people like that, always come up, volunteer to give a hand. Of course, they knew very well that if I said so-and-so, that was what I was going to stand by, and that was it.
Were the signalmen particularly close to the seamen particularly, or would you go ashore with them?
Yes. Once you was ashore, your ship was your ship. It didn't matter who you was. In the Swift, when we went ashore, you saw one, you saw the lot. It was all together in one heap.
But you lived in your own mess and board ship, and you kept to yourselves?
Yeah. So you got on with your own job, and you'd see the people, and